It is a tremendous honor. Everyone here is awesome, so I'm hoping to continue that streak. We'll see how it goes. All right, taking on the theme of inheritance, I'm going to start with chiles rellenos. Alba makes chiles rellenos for the first time. 26 years old, sweating, grunting. Pinches mexicanos que humor llenar estas vainas con carne y queso. She will go on like this for the next hour. Not because she hates Mexicans, but because she's using the wrong peppers. When finished, a feast. 30 tiny serrano peppers, fiery pea shells, 1/20th the size of the poblanos they emulate, filled with carne molida and Oaxaca cheese. Not an easy battle, hunched over the table, surgically slicing and stuffing, eyebrow-plucking mirror transformed into chile stuffing necessity. The baby laughs at her in the corner. Alba will pick up the phone and stand erect behind the counter, slam buttons like a judge does a gavel, and softly say to the receiver, I made you chiles rellenos like you always want. Alex will come home, kiss his wife, and marvel at her work. He will eat every last chile, not saying a word. Meat and cheese overcome by burning. He will not ask for water. Alba sits and watches him bouncing the baby on her knees, pleased. When the meal is over, she will wash his plate and hum a cumbia, waiting for Alex's verdict. Gracias, mi amor. Estaba muy rico. Alex cracks open a beer. Alba sits beside him. They watch television from the kitchen table, holding hands underneath. Daughter of the American Revolution. I almost failed my citizenship test. There were 10 questions. I missed the first two. To be fair, I was 12, and I explicitly told the old lady administrator that I fared poorly on dates. My first lesson as an American, exposing weakness merely opens you up to attack. My friend Matilda will slaw the skin of colonialism and slavery over coffee, 400 years intoned reverent. The goal, she will explain, is to miscegenate things just. The future looks like you. This is when she will point at me, melting pot of wrongs made right. What day was the Constitution signed? A trick question designed to confuse. Most people answer 4th of July. I know this because I will for years poll my U.S. American friends. All of them miss the question. I have committed the date to memory, perfect in my acquired patriotism. Matilda laughs when I tell her I'm more American than she. Not possible, she'll say, and I know she's capitalized the letters. I am a daughter of Africa, Europe, and America. I tell her I am the same. A different Africa, a different Europe, a different America. Plus she'll say, I was born here. I'm not sure that counts as much as she thinks. The second question I miss, what day did the Civil War end? I mishear it and answer, slavery. The old lady will repeat the question, charitable in her administration. Appomattox, I will respond. She'll repeat day like I'm deaf, until I circle my head slowly in disbelief that sounds like Spanish. I will grow tired of Matilda. Her contests about what shade of brown had it worse will wear me thin. I will try to explain the plight of Latin America, raped by conquistadores, double-raped by America's Monroe Acquisitions Act. I will tell her there is nothing more American than naming yourself after an entire continent, as if there was no one else, United States of. I ask her if she knows the date of Appomattox. My smugness does not fit inside her silence. When I swore to be a U.S. American, I was given a flag pin and a letter of welcome from the Daughters of the American Revolution. I looked at this old woman, so different from the one before, hugging me in congratulations as if she'd given me the keys to heaven. September 17, 1787, I said to her. She smiled confused. April 9, 1865. She nodded and mouthed, "Of course, dearie," as if her father's revolution was a secret I kept. She simply delivered flags and soft hugs, a legacy of stick waving and heart palming. And to Matilda, I will say, I took a test to be here. I filled out forms, waited in lines, endured examinations. I wanted it. Don't you see, Matilda? I wanted this, unlike you. As if that counts for anything at all. Things I wish weren't true, number one. In sixth grade, a popular boy in school sat me down. The lunch bell had rung, and he'd asked to speak to me after class. I'm not sure what I really thought it would be, a declaration of crush, a question about my math skills. So serious with his white boy eyes, deep and honeyed as his South Texas skin. He did not smile as he delivered the verdict, exact in his phrasing and quick to leave. You stuff your bra too much, he told me. Everyone knows you just do it for attention. Years later, I will invent great comebacks, the most triumphant of which involves a flashing, as if seeing my giant junior high boobs would solve my social crises, make me less awkward and better loved by strangers with bowl cuts. Ha ha, I would say, these are real. Maybe jump up and down for buoyancy. The popular boy would widen his eyes, ashamed at doubting the flesh of my tissue. I still wonder why he did it at all. If I had been made of just Kleenex and hope, what did he stand to gain in telling me? What mockery did he hope to spare me that didn't already exist? I would ask him all this if I could do it again, and he would probably do the same and leave me. What I did do, ate lunch alone on a bench outside, crumbled myself invisible within my sweater, pondered my own paper body so willing to fold quietly like a love note burned before it's read. Things I wish weren't true, number two. He started banging the table with his fist, arrhythmically, the violent staccato clear as if the table's surface was my mouth. Tell me, he screamed. Tell me how I ever hurt a black person by being white. Tell me how I ever benefited from being white. Tell me what affirmative action scholarship did I get? What government aid went to me? His fist continued to bang. Tell me, bang. Tell me, bang. He was bigger, certainly. His palms the size of my face. There is no stopping a boomerang once you have unleashed it. It's just a matter of waiting for impact. I know this lesson well. He was not my first angry white man. Why don't you speak? I looked at the other men at the table, pale as they were silent. I knew this battle was mine, that even though they loved me, the others probably agreed with him, complicit in their inaction, gazes searching mine, wondering what I would say next. You don't know my story, he finally concluded, proud, his fist resting on his beard, my face a burial ground of accusations. I thought of my twice-great-grandfather who changed his name to fit in, married whiter woman to improve us, reshaped his tongue guttural and quick. I thought of my grandmother perpetually praising the recessive in us, the way we've escaped the darker darkness under our fingernails and in the folds of elbows and knees. Instead, I sipped beer, waited for him to leave, which he soon enough did. The one that screams loses, my mother is fond of saying. But when I looked at the other men, the ones who did not speak, I knew that it was not true. He called to apologize within the week. I did not take it, unwilling to accept reparations forced on me like his fist. And when I think of the others, there is a palm-shaped bang in my throat, a shock of pilgrims searching for a place to pray, spreading like an untempered plague. And because Joan asked me to end on a happy note, you requested this poem, so I'm gonna do it. Okay. It's called The Naming of Things. When I was 4 years old, the night shadows often pulled me from my bed to the next room where my brother fought them for me. That one, he'd say, that one looks like a bento tree. That's Mr. Tree. That one looks like He-Man. That's obviously Optimus Prime. I like naming things. I still do. I name characters in fictions that I will never write. Cornelius, Henrietta, Tlacotaltepetl. I name clouds and stars. I love the names some already have. Sirius, Stratocumulus, Ursa. Viruses and bacteria, despots and revolutionaries, Staphylococcus, Ebola, Idi Amin. The scientific names of extinct animals, Ruffus cucullatus. That's the dodo bird. I love the names of streets and old men. Mellon Terrace, Humphrey McClintock. My boyfriends freak when I name our potential children. as do friends, colleagues, and strangers I meet in line at the post office. I have names for all my impossible offspring. If I had a baby with the state of Texas, I would name him Wesley, because I think Wesley, Texas has a nice ring to it. My brother's not around anymore. I like to name the reasons why fate and circumstance, but I name him loss instead. I've lost many things. I name that abandonment, carelessness, and fear. I name long nights' loneliness and sad nights' pity. I name the bags under my eyes and the curve of my belly and insecurity. I name myself lazy and scared and afraid. I have written the names in this imaginary baptismal book I carry around my neck, Albatross. I have bathed the letters in holy water, weighed each consonant, and called myself afraid. Yet it's easy to see bleak and downtrodden, so I decided to prove that the pages of my book look more like an etch-a-sketch than stone, that I can rename those suckers. Uncertainty can become promise. Abandonment can be called transition. Pity, self-reflection, insecurity, simply an abundance of raw material from which I get to carve myself anew. Scared is also growth. Fear is living. Loneliness is learning. I want to rename my friends life support machines, but that sounds cold and sterile, so I will rename them Mateys, because they mostly look like pirates. I want to take the space in my heart where loss lives and rename it memories. Call it the story of me. I want to name my heartaches after hurricanes. This is Heartache Nimrod, level 5 idiot. No. I want to call for metaphor, to know there is a bridge, a muscle that links two ideas, ideas like me and you, and redefines them as us. I want to get mixed up in that metaphor and emerge resampled, recataloged, revamped. My brother told me names were powerful and should be used wisely. That was all there was to it, to let go of everything that was wrong. So tonight, I rename myself Ambition. And I rechristen all y'all Daydreamer and Lover and Wisher and Alive. If I had a baby with the future, I would name her Possibility. I would name her Adventure. I would name her after all of us. Thank you.